Hello, and welcome to part 3 of our 7-part series on Windows Server 2012 R2, The Essentials Experience. And today we're going to talk about the features and functionality that were previously only available in the Essentials Edition, but are now also available as a role that you can install in the Standard and Data Center Editions as well. So today's presentation is going to be on the installation, we'll talk about some migration guidance, and the getting started tasks, and how to get the server configured initially as you get it up and running. So quickly looking at our agenda today, we'll just go through the basic installation flow. We'll talk about the various migration guidance that's out there. We'll go through fairly quickly the getting started setup tasks. The following sessions in this series will go into detail on each of these different areas, so I'll try to go relatively quickly through these and not repeat everything in the sessions to come. And then finally we'll look at the global server settings that you can also set up, and this is where things like setting up remote access and so on will live. So let's go ahead and get started. So as we look at the installation process, we'll begin with just some basic system requirements. Really, this is just a reference slide that I wanted to include. I have a link at the top there that points to the page in TechNet where you can find the most up-to-date information all the time, although this is pretty well locked and has been for a while at this point. But just wanted to include this again basically for your reference. So things get started with the installation phase, and this of course is if you aren't purchasing, you know, an OEM server that has Essentials pre-installed. But if you're just using the volume licensing media or the retail media or what have you, then things start off with the OS installation phase, the basic environment of laying down the bits. So the things get going with just setting your location information and the different locale and the language and so on and so forth. And then you have an opportunity to optionally install the drivers that you want, select the system disk that you're going to use. It will go ahead and verify any prereqs that may be necessary in order to get started, and then it's going to launch into the Windows Server installation phase, where it's just going to copy over the bits onto the drive that you've selected. So once the OS installation phase is completed, and this is pretty well, this looks pretty much exactly like it does for all the editions of Windows Server, but once that's finished, then it's going to go ahead and begin the Essentials Experience configuration. And this is for the edition, so if you're installing the Essentials edition, this will begin automatically. And if you're installing Windows Server Standard or Windows Server Data Center, then of course the Essentials Experience configuration would only start if you choose to then install that role. And then once that role is installed, then the Experience configuration will begin. So one of the things that's new, and we talked about quite a bit in the second module in the series, is the ability to install Essentials as a virtual machine. So you can do this with the Essentials Edition with just a single license. And one of the things that makes it very easy is the ability to extend the wizard, the configuration wizard for Essentials, to ask you simply at the beginning if you want to install as a virtual instance or whether you want to install it directly on the physical hardware. And this is done by select OEM vendors who custom create the image to include this step in the configuration wizard, just to help them, you know, help the experience get started. They've got all of the different settings and the configuration information that's needed in order to set up the virtual machine kind of baked into that image. Now, as a volume licensing customer, you can also install Essentials as a virtual machine, but you won't necessarily see this page of the wizard. And we'll go through here in a couple slides and I'll show you how that flows through. But basically, just the flexibility that you now have is to install Essentials as a virtual machine. And again, this can be done on the Essentials Edition, and it's most often done, you know, if you have Standard or Data Center editions, those are most often used, obviously, to run virtual machines. So that's very much typically how you would see it in those environments. Now, if you are a system builder or an OEM and you're interested in how to create that custom image, I've included that TechNet link down below. It's fairly detailed, but you may wish to do that. So once the bits are down and the configuration begins, it goes through just a few screens that allow you to put in some basic information about the server in order to get it set up and ready to use. So the first thing that it's going to do is verify the time and date. So this is critically important for things like making sure that you can establish secure connections and that SSL certificates work and all that kind of stuff. So very important to go ahead and make sure that the time and date is right on the server. You can just put in the high-level company information, the name of the company, the name that you want the Active Directory domain to be, the name that you want the server to be, things like that. Then it goes into just creating an administrator account. So as a security best practice, the built-in administrator account is disabled as part of the setup of the Essentials experience, and it prompts you to create an administrative account that you would then use to do your management tasks. So that's baked into the wizard. Then you can choose your update settings, again, as part of getting started, getting set up, whether you want to just use the recommended settings and update automatically, whether you want to do that manually or whatever the case may be. So basically, once you've answered those few questions, it will go ahead and update and prepare the server, update if you've requested it, and prepare the server, and getting all the bits installed, getting all the proper roles and dependent roles installed and configured to work together, and then the setup is complete. And at that point, you are able to then launch into the dashboard. So I promised to talk about how you would install as a virtual machine if you have the volume licensing bits or even the retail bits. And this is the case if you didn't purchase an OEM server where they have kind of created a custom image. So what's going to happen is as soon as the OS phase of the pre-OS phase has finished and all the bits are laid down, when the server boots up, it's going to just go right into that configuration wizard that we just went through to configure the Essentials experience. But if you're wanting to use the physical server as a Hyper-V host, you don't want to install Essentials experience right on the physical server. So the first thing that you can do is simply cancel that configuration wizard. And to prevent it from restarting, there's a PowerShell script here that you can enter, and it just basically takes the run key out of the registry so that it doesn't try to start the configuration wizard again. There's also a shortcut in the taskbar that's used to start the dashboard interface. You can delete that because you won't need that in the parent partition that we're going to set up here to make it a Hyper-V host. And you want to go in and start the Server Manager console and basically just clean things up. Again, when you are doing virtualization, the parent partition or the OS instance that's installed directly on the physical hardware, you want it to do as little as possible so that you don't have to maintain it or update it or change it. So it's definitely, aligns with not only best practices for virtualization, but in fact aligns with the licensing terms as well, that the parent partition is only used to support guest virtual machines and manage and monitor those guest virtual machines. But you're not running things like Active Directory or any other arbitrary type workloads on the parent partition. So the next step then is to remove the different roles and features that got prepped to support the Essentials experience. So we can go into the file and storage services and remove branch cache, remove DFS, remove the web server, and of course remove the Windows Server Essentials experience role itself. And then there are a few features as well that we don't need. So ASP.NET you don't need, and the parent partition, you don't need group policy management or branch cache again, you don't need ink and handwriting services, and so on and so forth. So this is just to reduce the attack surface of the parent partition of the Hyper-V host and get rid of things that you're not going to be using when the server is going to be used for Hyper-V. So once that's done, then the next steps are to go ahead and use the Server Manager console to add the Hyper-V role. So this is really what's super new in 2012 R2. In Windows Server 2012 Essentials, you didn't see the Hyper-V role at all. It wasn't available, and now it is. So once you've got things cleaned up, you can go ahead and add that role to go ahead and turn that on. You can also, this is where you would want to create your storage spaces on the physical host server. So you don't create storage spaces in guest virtual machines. And this is, you know, general guidance. This is applies to the Essentials Edition, but also the Standard Edition and Data Center. If you're going to have guest virtual machines, you don't set up storage spaces inside of the guests. You would set up storage spaces for the Hyper-V host, and then you can use, you know, you store your VHD files, your VHDX files on any of those storage spaces volumes. So once you've got your storage set up the way you like it, then go ahead and start the Hyper-V Manager console. And at this point, you can enable for this Hyper-V host, you can enable Hyper-V replica and live migration. And so that would be highly recommended. It's one of the, those are two of the really big benefits of virtualizing your installation of Essentials, is so that you can use Hyper-V replica as a very low cost way to do some business continuity, support some business continuity scenarios, and also to be able to live migrate. So if the server that you're using after, you know, several years, it's out of warranty, you want to be able to just easily migrate the Windows Server Essentials instance that you have to a new server. You could just live migrate it and not have to reinstall, not even have to take the server offline or kick any of the users off or make any of the applications unavailable or anything like that. You can simply live migrate across. And those features need to be just turned on for the Hyper-V host, so you can do that as you get started here. The next step is to create a virtual switch so that you've got some networking that your virtual machine can use. Most typically, you're going to then create that virtual switch connected to a physical network adapter in the server so that your Essentials virtual machine can talk to the rest of the world. Once you've got that done, then you can just go ahead and create the new virtual machine. Some recommendations as you do that, as you get started, again, kind of new in Server 2012 R2, we have the Generation 2 virtual machines that you can create when you're creating a virtual machine. And so I would recommend that you go ahead and use that. So that gets rid of things like the legacy IDE controller and the synthetic NIC card that acts like a legacy NIC. You don't need that anymore. You don't need COM ports and things like that. So if you choose the Generation 2 VM, then you get a much more modern, you know, kind of virtual motherboard, if you will. So recommend going ahead and doing that. You'll need to configure at least 4 gigabytes of RAM for the virtual machine. More is better. RAM isn't that expensive. And the more you're going to do with the virtual machine, the more users you're going to support and the more applications that you're going to run on the server, of course, the more memory you're going to want to have. I would recommend that you configure at least 2 virtual hard disks. So one would be just for the operating system and the other would be a data volume. And of course, you can create more virtual hard disks as you want. And again, what you would do if you want to take advantage of storage spaces is when you create the virtual hard disks, the VHDX files, you'd want to store them on the volume that's your storage space's volume. And that way you can extend and expand the virtual hard disk as you need it for the VM, and you can also extend and expand the underlying storage space's disk to add capacity as you need to. And so once you've got your Hyper-V installed and you've got your virtual machine created, then simply start the virtual machine and install Essentials as you would normally, so as if you were just going to install it directly on physical hardware. So at that point, if you're using the Essentials Edition, it will go through the same OS installation phase. It will restart and then begin the Essentials wizard, the Essentials configuration wizard, and at this point you just continue on through that wizard. So that's a little bit cumbersome in terms of, you know, setting it up as a virtual machine in the you know, with the VL bits or with the retail bits. And so if you're going to do it a lot, then it makes sense to visit that TechNet page and go ahead and customize an image that lets you have the choice to virtualize as part of the configuration wizard. But if you're only going to do it once or twice, or you're going to do it relatively infrequently, there aren't necessarily a lot of steps here, and it's pretty straightforward. You don't need any special skills. It's basically done directly just through the UI, so your mouse and keyboard. All right, so your last deployment choice that you have is also to run Essentials, the Essentials experience in the cloud. So we do have it available in Windows Azure. So this is, of course, going to run as a virtual machine up in Azure. It's just a very, very easy way to get started with Essentials. You can literally be up and going in just a few minutes. And then you can easily adjust the scale of the virtual machine that you have as your needs change. So it could start fairly small, and then you can grow. You can add, memory and add capacity as your needs grow, as your company grows, or what have you. So this way, you know, it's very much kind of a pay-as-you-go approach, and you just pay for what you're using. There are no upfront capital costs for buying a server or buying hard drives, buying memory, any of that. You know, you're basically just subscribing to a virtual machine in the cloud. So the server runs in the Azure environment, of course, is very robust. It has we have data centers in multiple places. You can choose which zone you want to be in, so a specific geography you can select. And of course, there is a service level agreement that that Windows Azure provides in terms of uptime and things like that for your central server. So if you want more information about the various options that you have, there's a link into MSDN that goes into greater detail. You can go ahead and check out the Windows Azure experience. All right, so the other thing that I wanted to talk about relatively briefly is the migration guidance that we have. Now, migration is a large, complex conversation, and I could easily spend as much time on migration as I have on this entire series and still not cover every case for every user out there. So what we've done is created a very robust set of documentation and published it out on TechNet that covers a number of different source server scenarios migrating to the Windows Server 2012 R2 Essentials. So provided a link to the TechNet library there, but I just wanted to kind of go at a high level through the different steps. So the first thing that you would do is prepare your source server for the migration process that's going to take place. So you want to clean things up, you want to apply all the latest updates that are applicable to your source environment, and just get things up and going, clean stuff out of Active Directory, clean things off the hard drives that you haven't looked at in 5 years and don't want and don't need and things like that. So just some prep steps. Then you would want to go ahead and install Windows Server 2012 R2 Essentials as a new server in the environment. It's going to be a domain controller, so you can set it up as a replica domain controller, another domain controller in the environment. So during a migration window, you're able to do that. You'll get you can't run multiple essential servers together for a long period of time. You can't run like a Windows Small Business server together with the Windows Server Essential server together on the same network for an extended period of time, but there is like a 1 month, I actually think it's like 21 days, where you're able to run the two together in order to support migration scenarios. Then you would take for your client PCs in the environment, your client computers, and join them to the new Windows Essentials server. You'd move your settings and your data from the source server to the destination server, enable folder redirection for your client PCs to point to the destination server. Then you can demote and remove the source server from the network, demote it as a domain controller so that you can cleanly take it out of the environment. And then you can perform a set of post-migration tasks for the migration. And finally, make sure everything is nice and clean and tidy by running the best practices analyzer on the Windows Server Essentials server. I also included a link there talking about transitioning from the Essentials edition up to the standard edition for using it with more than 75 users. So this was something that was important with the 2012 edition of Essentials, especially if you were migrating from Windows Small Business Server and you had more than 25 users. But if you're in an environment today that has more than 25 users and you do want to use the Essentials experience, then you can start directly with Windows Server Standard, because again, the Essentials experience is a role that's available in Standard, and you can just turn it on and use that as your starting point for environments with 26 users or more. But if you start in an environment that has fewer than 25 users and you do start with the addition and later grow beyond the 25 user limit, then you can transition in place without reinstalling or doing anything super hard or difficult. You can do an in-place license transition up to Standard, and so I included a link that describes that process. All right, so now I wanted to go through the getting started tasks, and again, I won't go too deeply into these. We'll go more deeply into them in the modules that will follow this one. So, but getting started here, everything starts in the Essentials dashboard. So you've got your dashboard, which is what is going to provide that that main primary administrative interface, so that your centralized place to go to get things done. It's a little bit simplified over the Server Manager console and the native tools. And again, it's really tailored for the smaller environments to really bubble up the most important things that you would need or want to do so that you can get started quickly and more easily than just kind of a general server environment. You can run the dashboard directly on the server, so if you sit in front of it and keyboard and mouse and monitor hook directly to the server, you can obviously run the dashboard that way, but you can also run the dashboard from a client computer via remote app. So you can log in to your normal workstation as a Standard user, do your day-to-day work, and then if you want to launch the dashboard, you can go ahead and do that, enter in your admin credentials, and run the dashboard as a remote app. So that's, again, as a best practice, that is generally the way that you would want to interact with the server. Now, one of the things that we've done is redesign the homepage to make it even more functional than it's been. So we continue to try to improve the experience of getting started with the server. So the first time you look at the dashboard, the setup tasks will be right at the top. Once you've completed all the setup tasks, then that setup box will move to the bottom, and the quick status will move to the top, because that's what you're generally wanting to see, is just the status of your environment once you're already up and going and just kind of using it on a day-to-day basis. So there are a number of getting started tasks. It's kind of just a little to-do list, and we'll go through these, and they're used to customize, of course, the behavior of your server, and are a little bit different, or can be a little bit different in each customer environment, but the basic list of tasks is the same. So the one of the first things to do is add your user accounts. So this is how you're going to control access to resources in the environment. So a little bit different than a peer-to-peer environment. So a lot of small businesses moving from a peer-to-peer environment to their first server, and the Essentials experience is a great way to go, because it provides that more simplified look and feel of having that first server. And user accounts then are ways to control resources, control access to those resources in the environment. So the account creation process is simplified over what you'd see in the native tools for Windows Server. We expose the basic information that you'd want to know, just what is the user's name, what is the account name that they want to use, are they a Standard user or a administrative user, and again, we'll go through more in detail on that in later modules. You can also set up access to the shared folders in the environment. If you choose to integrate with email, then adding user wizards includes a step to associate a mailbox to that user. So it doesn't matter what email backend that you choose to use. You can use an Office 365 subscription, you could be running an Exchange server locally on the network, or you could be using a third-party hosted Exchange service, and all of them can be integrated into the dashboard, so that when you set up your users, you can set up an associated mailbox all together in one step. And then finally, you can also tailor the remote web access permissions for each user as you create those. The next step is to go ahead and create your server folders. So this is how you're going to organize and store information in the environment. And so now that you've created your user accounts and also have your kind of the basis of your identity setup, then you can go ahead and create your server folders and assign permissions to them. So again, this is very much simplified over what you would have in the native tools. You just basically need to enter in the name of the shared folder that you want to create and its location, and then you assign user and group permissions. So again, once you've created your user accounts, you can group them into security groups. That's a new capability for Essentials in the 2012 R2 edition, and again, this has to do mainly with the fact that it's now available as a role in Standard and Data Center, and so that you can use it with more than 25 users. So it starts to make sense to create security groups to assign permissions rather than assigning permissions on a user-by-user basis, although that could work fine in smaller environments. So it's really kind of up to you how you want to approach that. And then as you create your shared folders, you can decide whether or not to include them in the server backup. So in most cases, certainly you would, but there may be some shared folders that are used for temporary data or something like that, and you don't want to include them in your backup setup, so that's fine too. There's a number of ways that shared folders can be accessed both locally and remotely. When you're remote, you can access them through the Remote Web Access, which is a web portal that gets automatically set up and configured for you as part of the Essentials experience setup process. And we also have a couple of apps. So you have the My Server app for both Windows and Windows Phone, which is a great way to interact with files and do light administration and even stream photo galleries or training videos or what have you from the server straight to your mobile phone and things like that. So a number of different ways that you can access your data remotely. The next step that we have here is, I've actually combined several of them together that are kind of smaller. One is configuring Microsoft Update. So you choose the Windows Update settings as part of the initial setup of just getting Windows Server installed. But here you can choose to enable Microsoft Update, so you get updates for Microsoft products beyond just Windows itself. You can also go ahead and configure the server backup. So this is obviously a key step, one of the main reasons for most small businesses to purchase their first server is to have a better data protection strategy or a better way to protect their business critical data. And so obviously key to that is setting up and configuring the server's backup. So now that you're centralized all of your data onto one location so you can find it and share it and collaborate on it, you definitely want to protect it. So the server backup wizard can be used to go ahead and define how that works in your environment. And then also I included here the setting up the client restore service. So this basically does a very, very slick and seamless configuration of WDS that can be used with Pixie boot or the network boot of a client PC if they need to do a complete bare metal restore. So as you join client computers into the environment, they are configured to automatically back up to the Essentials server overnight or during whatever time frame that you define on the server. And so now that you have client computers completely backed up to your server, if you do need to restore one, then you can simply do a network boot and then connect to the server, sign in with your admin credentials, select which PC that you're restoring, select a date to restore from, and then go ahead and get all those bits back, reboot the PC, and it's back up and going. So that's really slick. You can also, of course, create a little bootable USB flash drive and restore, get the restore process started from that as well. But that is that's what the client restore service is all about, and that's new, so I wanted to kind of just touch base on that. And then next, we have the setting up the anywhere access. So this is a set of wizards that guide you through the process of configuring your router, so the inbound connections are redirected to the Essentials server for things like RWA. When people come in and use their web browser, put in your internet domain address, your URL, then it gets sent through the router to the Essentials server. So the wizard will help you do that. You could do that manually But if it's able to, the wizard will do the router configuration. It will help you configure your internet domain name and get the remote web access set up to use it. It will help you get an SSL certificate installed on the server, so you can purchase a new certificate or you can use an SSL certificate if you already have one. You just need to export it as a PFX file, and then you can go ahead and provide that to the wizards, and that will go ahead and do everything it needs to do to hook it up to IIS. There's nothing that you have to do to get into those nuts and bolts of how it works. And then you can also enable the remote web access portal and or the VPN capabilities of the Windows server. So you can choose how users are able to connect to the server remotely. You can further customize the remote web access portal, so we'll talk about that here in a bit when we talk about the global settings for the server. And you can use VPN connections to remotely join client computers into the Essentials environment. So this is new as of the last version of Windows Server 2012 Essentials. But you have the ability to, when users are out of the office, they're not local on the local network of the Essentials server, they can still join their client PCs to the Essentials Active Directory domain by establishing a VPN connection to the server and then joining over that secure connection. And so, you know, turning on the VPN connectivity option then enables that scenario. The next thing that we have is setting up health reporting. So health reporting is, and we'll talk a little bit more about this again in the next module, but it is a way to get proactive alerts about this, the health status of the environment, both for the essential server itself, other servers in the environment, as well as the client PCs in your environment. You can set this up so that the report is generated on a daily basis, and it can also be sent through email. So this is very handy, especially for partners who want to have a health report emailed to them about the status of their customers' servers and server environments, so that they can take proactive steps to solve and resolve problems before customers are calling them up and telling them that things aren't right. So you do need to configure your mail server settings. Again, it doesn't matter if you're using Office 365 or on-premise Exchange. You can just set up the mail server settings to match, and then put in the an address for who is sending the health reports. So typically, this could be your admin account for your server, and then a list of recipients who should receive the health report. So the alerts now are shown as a tab in the dashboard on the homepage. So there's a sub-tab called Health Monitoring. It used to be in the previous version, this would just kind of come up as a dialog box, but it's been integrated into the dashboard more seamlessly, and it looks much more like all of the rest of the pages in the dashboard. So just kind of cleaning up the UI there a little bit. The alerts that you see provide not just the fact that something went wrong, but actually some prescriptive guidance, so you have some indication of how to fix that issue. And then many of the alerts actually even provide a link to the appropriate tool that you can use to fix things. And then the last step is to connect the client computers into the environment. So now that you've got all of your users defined and you've got your shared folders set up and everything is good, you can go ahead and get your client computers connected. So for computers that are local to the network, they can launch this from a browser. And they just put in the name of the server /connect in their web browser, and that will bring up the Connect Computer Wizard. And again, for folks who are remote, you can use the remote connectivity and use your internet domain name to go ahead and get started. And so the Connect Computer Wizard runs through a number of different things to get stuff going automatically. You can manually join client computers to the Essentials environment if you want to do that, but the wizard makes sure that you don't miss any steps or skip any steps, and it goes ahead and helps you do some things that are hard to do if you're doing it manually. So it goes through and verifies the prerequisite software that the Essentials environment needs. It prompts for the credentials that are going to be used on this PC. So an end user can go through the wizard by themselves to get started, or you can go through it for them, whatever the case may be. One of the things that it does that's very nice is allows you to move your settings and data over as you join into the Active Directory domain. So if you have a peer-to-peer network and you have local profiles on the different client PCs, when you join a domain, you'll get a new profile, a new user profile for the domain. And if you do it manually, there's no good, easy way to migrate the user's personalization settings and their shortcuts on the desktop and any files and stuff that they have. And that's something that the wizard allows you to do, is go ahead and take care of that for you. So that's pretty slick. It does require that you have the business SKUs, so it won't work with the home SKUs of Windows Client. But if you do have the business SKUs, then it can go ahead and help you do that. You can also enter in a description for the computer as you join it to the domain, and this will show up in the dashboard. It's just an easy way to keep track of which PC is which. You can decide if the client computer should wake up, if it's in sleep mode, in order to do a nightly backup. So generally, you would want to do that. And also you can choose whether or not to participate in the customer experience improvement program, and this is a great way for us to collect information about how the Essentials experience is being used so that we can continue to improve it. I also included a link there, just a list to the supported client operating systems, and so that you have that for your reference. Okay, so the last section is just talking about some of the general settings that you can do on the server as a whole. So you can come in and you can modify the date and time. You can modify the locale as well as the update settings so that you can go ahead and control that. You can activate the server, which is typically taken care of as part of the setup process, but if you need to do that afterwards, you can go ahead and do that there. Also, you can modify the feedback options and choose whether or not to automatically report errors back to Microsoft. So that's, again, it's very helpful, and that information does make a difference. That is used by the development team to fix especially corner case type errors, or errors that are very hard to reproduce in a test lab. Once we have, you know, people all over the world in all sorts of different environments using it, that information about things that go wrong is invaluable in order to make sure that doesn't happen in the future. There's also a power button here in the dialog box that so that you can restart and or shut down the server, which may seem a little bit odd, especially if you're sitting in front of the server, but this is also available even if you're working remotely. So if you're using the dashboard from a remote location and doing some things, making some changes, and you want to restart the server, then this is an easy way to go ahead and do that. The next thing that you can do in terms of general settings is set up the media settings. So media support is now an optional download, and this again is really to support the fact that the Essentials experience is available as a role in the Standard and Data Center editions as well as the Essentials edition. So we've disassociated the media streaming support from the operating system itself, but you can download that if you need or want to use it. And then this allows you to more easily share pictures, to stream video and music from the server. This can be great for streaming, you know, training videos or whatever the case may be. So that's supported by Remote Web Access, by the My Server app for Windows and Windows Phone, and also for any DLNA compliant devices. So you can tweak those settings. You can also adjust the Anywhere Access settings. Again, we kind of went through most of these when we were going through the Getting Started tasks, but you can change them if need be. So you do need to set up Remote Web Access before users are able to connect to the server remotely. And again, as I mentioned, many of the routers can be configured automatically, but you can also, of course, set it up manually. You can use a new internet domain name. You can use one that you already have. You can manage it manually. You can select a registrar partner that will allow all of the DNS settings to be managed automatically. That's very handy if you're using an internet connection where you're getting a dynamic IP address from your ISP. If you use the automatic DNS management, then the server will continuously talk to the registrar partner and say, hey, this is my IP address, you know, kind of over and over again. And if that address changes, then the registrar partner knows that it should update your external DNS records so that people can connect into RWA without running into any problems and without you having to change it if your public IP address ever changes. Again, you can use a new SSL certificate or an existing SSL certificate, and this is what's used again to secure that traffic across the internet. And you can also do things like customize the title and background image and the logo for remote web access. You can modify and customize the links that are displayed on the homepage for your users. And you can decide whether or not when you're doing remote administration, whether the dashboard is just launched and run as a remote app, or whether you want the full remote desktop experience so that you can get to all aspects of the server remotely. And then finally, you can tweak the branch cache settings. So this is a new bit of functionality, and it makes it easy if you're using the Essentials experience in a branch location. And again, this is more of a scenario with the role in the standard edition, then you can turn on branch cache, and this is going to just improve the experience for users in those remote locations. So if you're storing most of the data on a server in the headquarters location, then being able to cache those files in your branch location will really speed things up for users, but still let you centralize the storage of files in one particular headquarters location. So you can go ahead and turn that on. If you use the wizard here in the dashboard, it will set it up in distributed cache mode. You can find more about that at the TechNet link there. If you do want to set it up in hosted cache mode, which is a little bit more robust, you can go ahead and do that manually, and that will work just fine. And again, a link to TechNet where you can find more information about doing that. So we also have, as part of the setup of the Anywhere Access pieces, we have the wizard that helps you set up your internet domain name. So there's a lot of different paths you can go down depending on whether you're creating a new internet domain name, using an existing one, whether you want to manage it manually, whether you want to manage it automatically, whether you're going to use an existing SSL certificate, or you're going to buy a new one, or what have you. So there's a lot of flexibility here, but as you go down the path that's appropriate for you, there aren't that many steps involved. So this just kind of helps get everything started so that incoming connections from the internet to your server work correctly. One of the things that I'll point out here is that if you're getting started and you don't already have an internet domain name and you would just like to try some of this out, you can actually get a free domain name from Microsoft, that is remotewebaccess.com. So you'd get a third level domain, so you could put like your company name in front of that, so like contoso.remotewebaccess.com. And that's a really easy way to get started. The SSL certificate is already created, and so you can have secure connections without having to buy an SSL certificate, and you can use this to connect remotely from anywhere across the internet. So that is an option, especially as you're just getting started, although generally you'll end up replacing that with an internet domain name that's tailored to your own company. So again, we've talked about importing the SSL certificate, so the wizard's going to help you if you need to create a new one. Typically, when you're setting up Anywhere Access, we use the host name of remote and plus your internet domain name. You can adjust that if you want, and then that will affect the SSL certificate that you have or that you need to use. And again, whether you're going ahead and purchasing one, during the process of running through the wizard or whether you already have one that you can go ahead and use. It will take care of all the steps that you need to do in terms of creating a certificate request and all that stuff. It's not necessary to go into IIS management and do that and know all the ins and outs of the web server management. The wizard will walk you through the process and expose the things that you need to use in order to get your SSL certificate set up. So that is a quick overview of going ahead and getting started, getting the OS installed, and going ahead and getting it set up and configured for use in the environment. So I just wanted to wrap up with some next steps that you can do, some pointers to some great resources. We have a lot more technical resources available on our Tech Center for Windows Server Essentials, so I encourage you to check that out. We have a very active blog that's contributed to from the dev team for product feature information, from the customer service and support team for information about things that you may need to know about managing and maintaining the server on an ongoing basis. We do post some marketing information about new things that are coming and information. So it's a really dynamic blog, and I highly encourage you to go ahead and read that. An RSS feed is a great way to go to make that easy. We also have a very active support forum. Again, this is monitored not only by our dev team, but we have a great community of MVPs that really help us out and are very actively involved in helping folks to learn about the product and to solve issues that they have. We also, of course, have our product pages on MSCOM. So we have the Windows Server 2012 R2 product page, as well as a page for the Essentials Edition itself. And here you can download data sheets and white papers, and also an easy link to downloading the trial so that you can go ahead and get started and playing with the bits. Now, I also have a number of different resources for the partners here who are watching, so want to make sure that you're aware of the Ahead of the Game campaign and all of the great information that you can leverage there as well, so please do check that out. There's also a number of other partner resources that I wanted to make sure that you had quick and easy reference to here in the deck, as well as some information about how to buy Windows Server 2012 R2. So there's a number of different editions, and each one has a role to play depending on the scenario that you're trying to support and the customer that's involved. We also have a link to a number of different product and licensing resources. So again, wanted to just make sure you had that information easily available. And then a number of different programs that you can use in order to purchase. So again, wanted to make sure that that this information was available to you and you just had a handy reference for that. So thank you very much for joining me for this presentation on the installation and getting started with the Essentials and the Essentials experience. And I do hope that you'll join us for additional sessions in this series.